It is that time. What is going on, beautiful people of Nashville, of Middle Tennessee, wherever it is that you are hanging out with us on 104.5 The Zone, whether it's on the 104.5 The Zone app or on your Alexa smart speaker. Just play 104.5 The Zone. That simple to get involved with the show. We've had a fun one so far. Well, I don't know. Are you having fun? I don't know if I'm having fun. there are plenty of things to laugh at this morning, but I'm not quite sure I'm having fun. But I think we've provided an entertaining product thus far. I thought Pat Dooley was good. I thought you guys were great on the phones. You can continue to get involved over the course of the afternoon. 615-737-1045 is the number that you dial. 615-737-1045. So we're going to get into, and I don't know if people care about this, which is probably not the way that I should lead the segment. But the Athletic's power rankings are out, and I'm going to tell you what it says about the Titans, because this is a local sports talk show, and when things are said or written, or the Titans are discussed, or the Preds, or the Vols, or all the other teams that you guys care about in the SEC, in the NFL, whatever, all right, we're going to talk about it. Now, I happen to think power rankings are useless. It's like grading drafts after the fact. Like, it's just dumb. But there is a power ranking out. It is done by somebody whose work I respect, in Shiel Kapadia, and it has the Titans ranked in a place where probably most of the people in Middle Tennessee would think that they should not be ranked. So we'll spend some time on that later. And by the way, we're going to get the hell away from the Tebow talk. But I want to focus in on Urban Meyer for a hot second, all right? Because all of the Tebow talk is really just masking what is actually going on. What is going on is that Urban Meyer, who is a legendary, like legendary, both coach and control freak in a business that is riddled with control freaks. Every one of these coaches are, and if they tell you that they're not, they are lying to your faces. I'm sorry. It's just the business. Most good coaches are, and even some of the bad ones. Some of them get more control than they deserve, and they run things into the ground. Now, Urban Meyer has had a pretty high degree of success, both at Florida, at Ohio State, before that at Utah. We will see what happens in the pros. But the way that I look at this, because I was watching the NFL Network yesterday when I got home, and I heard the report from Rap Sheet on television. So why don't we have Rap Sheet fill you in on the information? Because remember, Tebow hasn't officially signed a deal yet, and it's already all over sports talk conversation. What Rap Sheet was basically saying is that this is in the works. It could be done by sometime in the middle of the week. And why don't I just let him take it from here?
Ian, it seems as though we have another Tebow update.
Yeah, we certainly do. My understanding is that Tim Tebow is expected to sign with the Jacksonville Jaguars and his former college coach, Urban Meyer. This according to me and my colleague, Tom Pelissero, right there. Nothing is done yet, but this is expected to be official in the next week or so. So Tim Tebow, who actually has had a couple of different workouts with the Jacksonville Jaguars, just some opportunities to show Urban Meyer and the rest of the Jaguars staff that he can make the transition from quarterback to tight end, his new position, certainly something where he has allowed the staff to be comfortable with him, the kind of player he could be, the work ethic obviously he has, and you know, has such a close relationship with Urban Meyer, Tom. This makes a lot of sense. It's expected to be a one-year deal where Tebow will have the chance to make the team, to make an impression, and we will see where this goes for here. But yes, in the next few days, in the coming days, Tebow expected to be back in the NFL.
And Ian, let's make this very clear. Tim Tebow is a long shot coming in to even make the Jacksonville Jaguars roster. He is 33 years old. He has not played in an NFL regular season game since 2012. That's 9 years ago. And he is now changing positions from quarterback to tight end, which is a transition that a lot of teams were interested in Tebow making, oh, let's say a decade or so ago. If anybody, though, would believe in Tim Tebow and believe that they can carve out some kind of role for him, it would probably be Urban Meyer, who, of course, molded Tebow into a Heisman Trophy winner, a two-time national champ, and a first-round draft pick back at Florida. Patrick?
Yeah, you mentioned the time, and it's odd to look at pictures of Glenn Dorsey tackling Tim Tebow there. Kind of puts in perspective the length of time that has passed since he played in the NFL, but we'll see. A fair tryout, perhaps, for Tim Tebow.
A fair tryout, perhaps. That's courtesy of the NFL Network yesterday on the latest Tim Tebow update, because now we're on Tebow watch, all of us, until the end of time. Ugh. But let's move on from Tim Tebow, okay? Let's put him out of our minds as best you can. Let's put this in the context of Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer came to the pros with the understanding that he would continue to be able to operate a football program the way that Urban Meyer is accustomed to operating a football program, meaning that he is the end-all be-all. There's an owner, yes, but Urban Meyer has final say on everything. The strength coach from Iowa, Lucas, can you look up his name for me, because I always forget. It starts, I know his first name is Chris, his last name escapes me. But let's put aside all of the racial issues that arose at Iowa that caused him to resign from his position. Chris Doyle is his name. Thank you, Lucas, for looking that up on the fly. Urban Meyer hires Chris Doyle to be the Jags strength and conditioning coach. And the justification is that we had a conversation. It's going to be fine. I've known him for 20 years. So that qualifies him, Chris Doyle, to be not just have access to a locker room with probably 70% or more African-American players with whom he has just had racial issues with at Iowa. Let's put that aside. But the only qualification is Urban had a conversation with him. We don't have his call. We don't have his text, a Zoom perhaps, probably not. Urban Meyer doesn't strike me as somebody who's terribly Zoom savvy, but what do I know? And the justification is, yeah, I know this guy. He's a good guy. Known him for 20 years. Like Urban Meyer going to bat for your moral compass as a person is something that's going to make me feel sleep a lot better at night. But he does this because he's Urban Meyer and he can. And because the Jags ownership has given him the ability to do this. Then there's enough blowback that Chris Doyle has to resign as a strength and conditioning coach of the Jags. And Urban Meyer, knowing him for 20 years, wasn't enough to save him because the PR was bad enough. So then let's try this Tebow thing. And the Tebow situation, to me, proves a point as to why Urban Meyer will not last more than 2 years in this deal. He is going to expend, Urban Meyer is, so much time, energy, resources, wearing people out on this is going to be done the way that I want it done because I'm Urban Meyer and I know how it should be. When he has zero NFL experience. It's not that I'm questioning him as a college head coach. It's not like I'm questioning him as a champion. I'm not questioning his winning percentage because he is exceptional by any standard of measurement in the college game. But this, if I'm Mike Vrabel and I'm the Titans and I'm looking at my former boss at Ohio State who's coming down into my division, I'm saying, I'm laughing. I'm laughing out loud. Now, Mike would never do that publicly. I don't know how Mike feels about the situation. Nobody, I don't think, is going to take out Urban Meyer. Nobody in NFL circles is going to take Urban Meyer out for doing stuff like this. But if I'm sitting in the AFC South, I am laughing at this man because it shows a complete and utter disconnect. Leadership in the locker room? You need Tim Tebow for that? You don't understand that a group of grown men, these aren't college kids, that are going to be in awe of former Heisman winner and two-time national champion Tim Tebow. These are dudes who know Tim Tebow as a television personality and more recently a minor league baseball player. And you're going to bring him into the locker room because you think that's going to give the locker room the juice that it needs. And Urban Meyer was very vocal about this during free agency, where he said it was awful. That's a quote. Awful to go through this process because of how the NFL does things differently than college football does. This was Urban Meyer after the first wave of the Jags free agency period.
And one more, if I can, back to signing guys. I mean, you're not used to signing guys that you haven't met with. Obviously, in recruiting, you meet with those guys. So how much, I don't know if anxiety is the right word, but maybe trepidation or how much is that an issue with you at this point?
Yeah, that was awful. I don't agree with it, but no one asked my opinion. I guess the old days you could bring them in and meet them, have dinner with them, and find out the football intellect, find out the character, find out that. So we had to do, the thing I found out is call someone who has a skin in the game, because they're going to not quite be, I don't see honest isn't their appropriate word, but so we did a deep dive. Every guy that we signed, I have Ryan Stamper and Marcus Pallard. I call those guys our assessment guys. They did as much deep dive as we could. The ones like Malcolm that Charlie Strong recruited and knew, we were good. Roy Roberts, we did a deep dive into him, and it came back extremely positive. So that was, to answer your question, that was awful. That I don't believe it should be that way. Not when you're making organizational decisions. I'm not sure how that rule came about, but that's, that to me, that's not good business.
Not good business. The billion with a B, the multi-billion dollar industry that Urban Meyer has now decided that he's going to dip his toe into. It's not good business the way that the NFL has gone about business. For everybody but who? Urban. Because he doesn't get it.
I mean, but the Tebow thing, in terms of good business via winning football games, it's not good business. In terms of selling jerseys, putting butts in seats, it might actually be good business. We're talking about the people of Florida here.
I don't care.
It's
not 2006. It's not even 2012. At some point, that stops. It has to. We'll find out. We'll talk about the Titans and where they are in the Athletics power rankings on the other side, and we'll put this Tebow conversation, send it into the sun until inevitably he makes the roster, and it'll just all come back again. And then he'll catch a touchdown pass against the Titans. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone. So let's get into list season, shall we? You guys ready for that time of year? No, is the answer to the question, but here we are. Lucas is the place that we find ourselves in.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's a tough scene. Now, I have been made aware, because many of you, I think many of you know me by now. Like, I think we understand each other. Those of you who get to the show, we appreciate that. And many of you, based on the glowing article that was written about The Zone by Barrett Sports Media, many of you, it seems, in fact, get the show. So thank you for that. But at this point, you know that I abhor mock drafts, that I hate Mount Rushmore conversations in sports, or really just in general, and that lists are the bane of my existence and something that I believe to be the worst thing in radio. Now, I have also been made aware that Blaine and Mickey are planning on doing a Mount Rushmore conversation later on when Blaine and Mickey take place from 1 until 3. And I hold that, make no mistake, this is not a shot at Blaine and Mickey, okay? These are two guys that are my friends and that I respect very much, and they do good work. But it is just not something that I enjoy. Me personally. It's like in a relationship. It's me. It's not you, okay? So the Mount Rushmore conversation will be held from 1 to 3. For us today, not happening with Pecorino. And I respect any and all who would choose to do the Mount Rushmore conversation. It is just not something that I'm interested in. Now, neither am I interested in power rankings, to be completely honest with you, but we're going to talk about them here because I think it is interesting to a degree. I think it's a good reminder of where Titans fans think their team is and where everyone else is. Kroenke says on Twitch, no Rushmore, let's talk Tebow. No, no more Tebow. It's done. I rebuke that in the name of Jesus. I'm done with
it. Yeah, I rebuke that in the name of Jesus.
Thank you. Caleb Farley is at my side. I fear no evil. Hear no evil, see no evil, speak no Tebow evil. At least in the second and third hour. But the power rankings on The Athletic stand out to me because there's a pretty wide gulf between, I think, where people in Nashville believe the Titans to be and where everybody else who looks at the Titans thinks they are. So Sheil Kapadia does great work for The Athletic. He's one of their national NFL writers. And Sheil does regular NFL power rankings. Now, it's an exhausting exercise because you have to have some kind of insight about all 32 teams, and that's a tough – if you want to do it well, it's a tough task. So he does this after the NFL draft in 2021. This is the updated version of the power rankings. Now, if you care about the top five, I'll give you the top five. It goes 1, Tampa Bay, 2, Kansas City, 3, Buffalo, 4, Green Bay, even though their quarterback is in open revolt, which unto itself kind of makes me laugh at the power rankings. 5, the Baltimore Ravens round out the top 5. You got to scroll for quite some time to find the team that won the AFC South last year. In Sheil Kapadia's, and if you want to weigh in on this conversation, please feel free to do so. 615-737-1045 is the number. 615-737-1045 is how you chime in on this conversation. Speaking of conversations, before I tell you where the Titans are ranked, if you're a college student that is looking to get into a career like this one, a career in sports media, then you can sign up today to be a part of 104.5 The Zone's second annual, I assume it's annual, maybe I shouldn't say that the copy doesn't say, I don't know if it's annual at this point, but it's the second one, the second student broadcaster seminar on Tuesday, May the 25th. You can learn about sports media from myself. I'll be a part of that panel. Jason Martin and Ramon Foster are going to be there. Mike Keith, voice of the Titans, and Bob Kessling, voice of the Vols, also going to be a part of that seminar. So to sign up, if you're a student, a college student interested in sports broadcasting, sign up for this free seminar at 1045thezone.com today. So now that we have, now to look through these power rankings on theathletic.com, you got to keep scrolling. You got to keep scrolling past the Miami Dolphins at 12. You got to keep scrolling past the Washington football team at 18. A wild card team, yes, but, you know, without a quarterback at this point. You got to keep scrolling past the New Orleans Saints at 19, who don't have a quarterback or maybe have a quarterback or a quarterback that plays tight end or a tight end that plays quarterback, whatever the hell you want to call Taysom Hill. So you have to scroll past 19 to find the Tennessee Titans at 20. Here's the blurb. We do this, I feel like, daily. This is called reading. It may be hard for the Titans to be as good as they were last year when they went 11-5. I add parenthetically, nobody is disputing that. They were 7-2 in one-score games and had the NFL's 6th best injury luck. Now that stood out to me. We'll go line by line in the Sheil Kapadia piece. 6th best injury luck is not something that I had initially considered. Because we talk about this all the time. It's as much about being lucky and healthy as it is about being a good and complete football team, I think. Especially in the NFL, especially in an expanded season. So 7-2 in one score games, 6th best injury luck for the Tennessee Titans. That includes losing Taylor Lewan, losing Jadeveon Clowney, Jayon Brown, Adoree Jackson, probably for the amount of time that he missed, I would say A.J. Brown. Because there was a substantial portion in the first half of the season that AJ just couldn't go. And then continued to play through the knee issues that he was having that ended up needing, you know, operations on both knees after the fact. And then he treated us all to a drugged up Instagram Live. Shout out AJ Brown. But 6th best injury luck. Sheil adds, this offseason they lost Arthur Smith as their play caller, number 2 wide receiver Corey Davis, and tight end Jonnu Smith left in free agency. The Titans are one A.J. Brown injury away from having the NFL's worst pass-catching group. Lucas, do you dispute that?
Not really.
So if A.J. Brown goes down, you don't turn no Josh Reynolds, no Des Fitzpatrick for you, no Cam Batson.
I'd say that's a bottom five wide receiver core.
Yeah, especially considering they don't have a starting tight end right now.
I mean, right there with the Lions. Who the hell's catching passes for the Lions?
I think they drafted somebody who's like basically Kenny Galladay light. But I
did they draft Terrace Marshall?
That sounds right. No, Carolina did. Because the Saints wanted him, so Carolina went up and got him, which I respect. So one A.J. Brown injury away from having one of the NFL's worst pass-catching groups. The additions of Bud Dupree and Danico Autry on defense should help. But overall, this team looks like it's going to take a step back. Wait, I'm not arguing any of that, right? Nobody is sitting here telling you, or at least nobody who's not just a blatant and obvious homer, is sitting here telling you that the Titans are going to be what the Titans were last year. Now, you may hope for that, by the way. You may hope to not see an otherworldly bad defense. You may hope that the Titans are different on that front. What I am anticipating, and what everybody should be anticipating, is that the Titans will not be the same group that needed to score over 30 points a game last year to be able to win 11 games. Now, how they will adapt in the 17-game regular season, playing a division winner's schedule. By the way, the NFL will announce officially the schedule on Wednesday night. Lucas Panzeca is going to be hosting a show with Will Bowling before Titans radio coverage begins, correct?
Yeah, we're going 6 to 7. Titans radio picks up at 7. Mike Keith, Amy Wells, Rhett Bryan, Coach Mack, the whole crew.
Be a good time for schedule talk. And then I'll come in here on Thursday and I'll hate myself because we'll have to do win-loss. And that is all. That is tantamount to Mount Rushmore conversations in stupidity. But I digress.
Just wait for after the Preds playoffs.
Oh, God.
That's when we really wade into the darkness. Like, this is fine.
What do you mean, wait? I'm taking vacation. I'll see you out there, bud. No thanks. But to say that the Titans are going to take a step back, but also make them the 20th. So let's say just by merit of winning your division, the Titans are a top eight team in football last year. Lucas, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. So top eight team in football last year. Let's say you're going to drop them 12 spots because they lost Corey Davis, Arthur Smith, and Jonnu Smith, or Corey Davis,
like
Arthur Smith,
unquestionably,
and Jonnu Smith.
Unquestionably a top 16 team in football, just based on the fact they made the playoffs.
Yes. Hosted a playoff game, won their division. The division was not very good, admittedly. But you had two playoff teams in your division, including yourself and the Colts. So when I look at the Titans, and I understand the reasons that Shiel has dropped them, I do not understand the scale of the drop. Also, because again, just like the Vegas odds, I look at who is above them. The Indianapolis Colts are 5 spots above the Titans for what? I don't understand this. On paper, says Shiel, this roster, talking about the Colts, is better than last year's group that went 11-5 while feasting on the NFL's easiest schedule. It's hard to make that case that they are better. The Colts have a gaping hole at left tackle. They signed Eric Fisher, by the way, and are counting on older players like T.Y. Hilton and Xavier Rhodes to play key roles. It is unlikely that Carson Wentz will be as bad as he was last season. He finished 11th in QBR in 2019, 12th in 2018, and was at the bottom of the barrel in 2020. If Wentz reverts to that form, the Colts should be able to compete for a playoff spot. But unless he somehow recaptures his 2017 magic, it's tough to see a path for the Colts being a serious contender in the AFC. Okay, fine. Why 5 spots above Tennessee? Nothing that the Colts ought. This obsession with Indianapolis makes no sense to me. And again, last season, meaningless. Totally meaningless. So maybe it's not worth getting bent out of shape about. But it is a consistent lack of awareness about the team that plays professional football in Nashville that astounds me. Nowhere in the mention or in the write-up of the Tennessee Titans did it include the best running back in the sport, a quarterback who threw for 33 touchdowns last year and ran for 7, 40 touchdowns for Ryan Tannehill, the most efficient, above Aaron Rodgers in efficiency and quarterback rating, damn near better than Patrick Mahomes, statistically just as good, 20th best in the sport.
An offensive line that didn't really drop off despite being decimated by injuries.
615-737-1045. If you want to weigh in on this, it's not just that the Titans are low. I don't care about that. It's the idea, at least if I'm a Titans fan, that I'm looking at the Colts and being like, what the hell are you talking about? Do you not watch these two teams play? Lee is in Hendersonville. He wants to weigh in on the conversation. He wants to talk about Josh Reynolds. Lee, good morning. How are you?
How you doing? Buck, what I think is you take Josh Reynolds for Corey Davis. Josh had 52 receptions last year with Jared Goff at quarterback. We were averaging over 30 points a game. We were second in scoring and 28th on defense. If we fix the 28th on defense, and I think Josh Reynolds will pick up the slack, because Corey Davis went to sleep during the playoffs too. And then had Jonnu Smith missed a lot of games last year. You know, so we played without Josh Reynolds and Corey Davis before, and I think Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith. So I think Josh Reynolds is a good equalizer to Corey Davis, and then we'll find a tight end, I'm sure, when they start cutting them and stuff. But bottom line, if we can still stay at 28 points a game and our defense comes from 28th to, say, 12th or 15th and above, we'll be in better shape.
I appreciate the call, Lee. Just on Jonnu Smith, Jonnu Smith didn't miss a lot of games. He played in all but two. He played in 15 games. He started 14.
He was forced into a different role after the injury of Taylor Lewan.
Yeah. And listen, I'm not sitting here saying that the Titans have been slighted. They don't have a tight end. They lost a lot on offense. I don't know how rapidly, like, there is a world where this offensive line ages very, very quickly and you don't have the pass-catching threats to take the attention off A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry to open up your running game and to make the play-action passing game a threat again. You don't know what Todd Downing is as a coordinator. The year that he was in Oakland with the Raiders as the offensive coordinator, they went, 11-5 that year and made the playoffs. Derek Carr got hurt and they crapped themselves in the postseason.
That is the wild card in all this, though, right? It's a different play caller.
We have no idea what Todd Downing is at this point. I understand that you can go back and look at Oakland and that whole staff got fired, but that whole staff got fired because the owner had a Richard for John Gruden on a $100 million contract. How's that look? 615-737-1045. T-Dog is in Nashville. He wants to talk about the tight end, or I assume lack thereof, with the Titans. What's up, T-Dog?
Buck, this is my first time calling, but I've been listening to you for a long time, brother. So, I mad respect. Congratulations on the show, first and foremost.
Much love. I appreciate that, buddy.
So, secondly, over the past few years, and you said we have no tight end, and I strongly disagree. How can you look at Mr. Anthony Firkser, who probably has caught everything on his way, and he, I think, underrated, obviously, by far. That brother has caught everything that has been thrown his way. Now, there might be some blocking things that he needs to work on, but, man, we're going to be straight at the tight end, and I'll talk to you at the end of the season when we see Firkser pulling in probably about 8 or 9 touchdowns at the end of the season. So I just want to say, you guys have said that. I've heard everybody say, tight end. Firkser has been solid for this team. Am I wrong?
I mean, no, you're not wrong that he's been solid, but he's not Jonnu Smith. Thank you for the call, T-Dog. I understand what you're saying. And, like, if you're going to box score scout these two guys, Jonnu and Firkser, last year, like, you're not going to see – I mean, you're going to see a substantial difference in terms of touchdown production, but, like, in terms of times that they were targeted and catches, Firkser got targeted 53 times, Jonnu Smith 65 times. John, who caught 41 of those 65 targets, 63.1 catch percentage when it comes to his receiving production. Firkser, if you're going to look at that, has a higher percentage of balls caught, 73.6%. And I'm not, again, I am not knocking Anthony Firkser as a slot receiver, because that's what he was. I think he's totally productive that way. That's why I think that the need for a slot receiver, why don't the Titans draft a slot receiver? Why did they wait? Why did they pass on, the guy that went to the Jets for Elijah Moore? Why did they pass on Elijah Moore in the first round and not trade up to get him in the second round? They got a slot receiver. His name's Anthony Firkser. What are you going to do when Firkser's playing the slot and you don't have a tight end? You need somebody who is more fully functional. You need a down-in, down-out guy. I'm not saying that Firkser's a bad player. I'm just saying he's not top. He's not tight end one. 615-737-1045. We'll go quickly to James in Westmoreland, who wants to talk about the pass catchers as well. Good morning, James. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you.
I agree with the Firkser catching percentage and touchdowns in the playoffs the last couple of years. I think he's had two. But Reynolds essentially numbers for numbers matched Corey Davis 2 years ago when we made the deep playoff run to the championship game as a number three playing behind two Pro Bowlers. So I think, you know, it's kind of like the Tannehill deal. He's never had the opportunity, and they're kind of giving him the benefit of the doubt to see if he can do more with more. And I understand that. On defense, it's Janoris Jenkins. I think he's an upgrade over the two starters we had last year. And I think he's younger as well.
No, he's actually older than Malcolm Butler. But I appreciate the call, James. Listen, Jack Rabbit's a good player. I think he's going to be fine. And by the way, you've got like a good problem in the secondary right now. You got too many defensive backs. You don't have a ton of availability to put them. Like, you can't start them all at once between Jackrabbit, between Christian Fulton, now Caleb Farley, depending on what time he's available to go, and Elijah Molden, who was on the radio show on Friday. And by the way, it was a great interview. Go check it out.
And Reynolds did not match Corey Davis's production 2 years ago, but there is something to be said for the 600 yards as a number three receiver. He also caught 8 touchdowns in 2018.
Do you have the numbers for him in front of you?
From which season?
Well, give me – so the title game run was 2019, right? That's when the caller said that he matched Corey Davis' production. I'll pull up Corey Davis.
Yeah, and these are regular season stats, but he played in all 16 games.
You know, wait.
Go ahead.
We'll talk about this on the other side. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone. Oh. Every time Will Bowling walks into the studio, I literally have to tell him to shut up so I can turn on my microphone and do my radio show. Unbelievable. We'll get to him. He's coming up next. He's at the Preds game last night. And he's been particularly strong about Henry To'oTo'o. So I would like to get his thoughts and translate for me. Translate in the language of the SEC what it is that I'm missing with this To'oTo'o conversation. Because apparently I'm the only one. I was on 3HL yesterday. Don Davenport was railing about it. Ron Slay, even stronger. Brent Doherty, just basically all in unison, ripping Henry To'oTo'o for going to the University of Alabama. So I'll have Will explain that to me. Coming up next, and we'll talk about Pecorine's big night. But the caller previously had asked about or had mentioned that Josh Reynolds is not that deep a drop-off from Corey Davis and brought up their 2019 production in comparison. So Lucas has Josh Reynolds' numbers. I have Corey Davis' numbers.
And they were drafted in the same year.
Right. Corey Davis, fifth overall.
Exact Josh same Reynolds, samples. Well, not the exact same sample size because one was wide receiver one and two. But you know what I mean.
Well, no. Then it's not the same thing at all. And you've just made the case against yourself.
Same number of seasons in the NFL.
All right. Very good. One drafted fifth overall, the other one in the fourth round out of Texas A&M. So, Lucas, read to me the number of targets, catches, yards, and touchdowns that Josh Reynolds had in 2019.
Well, I don't have targets in front of me.
Okay.
But I have 16 games, 21 catches, 326 yards, averaging 15.5 yards per catch, and just one touchdown.
Okay. Corey Davis, 43 catches, 601 yards, two touchdowns. So not overwhelming scoring production, but really not similar. So I don't know if he's talking about 2019 production by Josh Reynolds and Corey Davis being similar. Now, I am absolutely willing to concede, because Corey Davis, the fewest number of catches that he's had was in his rookie season, dealt with a lot of injuries in 2017, did not have a touchdown in his rookie season, and the scoring production is lacking. 11 total touchdowns so far through his career. Last year was his career high at 5.
Reynolds has 9 career touchdowns.
Okay. Wait, 9 total.
Yes, he had 8 touchdowns in 2018.
Right. So 2018, his breakout year in terms of scoring, but in terms of being a functioning, like, regular role in the offense, it was last year. That was his highest percentage of
right.
targets.
And I apologize. He has 12 career touchdowns.
Okay, so more than Corey Davis. I was going to say the math doesn't add up.
No.
Anyway, math is hard. Barrett Gobley on YouTube says, math is still fun. Apparently not for me and Lucas. 615-737-1045 if you want to jump in. So I think that Reynolds can be comparable. Corey Davis nearly, he was what, 16 yards off being a 1,000-yard receiver. That is not easy to do. He caught 70% of the passes that were thrown his way. Green Bay, I understand. He did not look good. In the playoff game against Baltimore, he did not look good. And I understand why people, because people, I think, were accepting of the emotional strain that Corey Davis went through last year when he lost his brother and he ended up having to play the next day. That's not an easy thing to do. And I think people were accepting of that in the moment, but then largely discarded it after that game had passed. And then looked at him, and who's the corner out of Louisville that plays for the Packers now? I'm blanking on his name. But he basically locked down Corey Davis. Jair Alexander, thank you, Will Bowling, your first positive contribution to the show in 2.5 months. Poor Will. if he didn't drop wide open passes, he would have had 1,000 yards, says Chris Frazier. Okay, but like, I mean, if you're going to go drop by drop, Ferkser had drops last year too. Now, maybe they're not as obvious because you're not paying as close attention to Ferkser as you are Corey Davis. But I think you can get a semblance of the production, and much less you're getting it for under $2 million where Corey Davis is being paid 12 and a half, I think, average annual value. I don't know exactly what he's making in 2021. Barrett says, shut up, Will. YouTube. It's theme of the show. We'll rename it. 615-737-1045. Alex is in Nashville. He has a question for me. What's up, Alex?
Hey, so there's a lot of evaluation on the first-round picks and John Robinson's tenure not extending for that fifth-year option and all that. Where is the consideration on the compensatory picks? For example, with that Conklin walk, a lot of people think we shouldn't have happened if we would have paid him. You never draft Isaiah Wilson, never lose that pick, yada, yada. But if Elijah Molden turns into be even just an average serviceable player, that is one of the most underrated moves of John Robinson's tenure, because you get an extra player on your roster to fill a position of need or add depth.
I appreciate that, mm-hmm. Alex. That's a good point brought up by you, because this is the first time Elijah Molden is their first player that they've selected with a compensatory pick since 2013. It's been a while since the Titans have let more serviceable free agents walk than they've signed back to help bolster their roster. So the compensatory pick, and they're projected to have another third-round pick next year because of the way that the equation is done. I understand what you're saying about that, because they do matter. They do matter to a degree. They do matter to a degree, because you're talking about how can you get into the place where you're the Baltimore Ravens, right? Where the Ravens recycle compensatory picks year after year after year. They've got the formula down to a science. Well, I mean, it is a science. The formula is a science. But they have it down to a more specific science where they're comfortable letting guys like Matt Judon or Za'Darius Smith competent NFL players who are going to play at a high level for other teams walk because they know that they're going to be on the favorable side of the compensatory balance pick sheet. The Titans are trying to put themselves in that position. At least this season and this coming offseason, they will have done so, assuming that the projections are correct and that they will end up with an additional third-round pick once again. We'll compare more of Reynolds and Davis 2020 numbers at some point throughout the course of the show, but in the meantime, we have to talk about Pecorine. We have to talk about Pecorine. Will Bowling was there last night. He's gonna set the scene, as play-by-play broadcasters are known to do. And then we'll talk about Henry Toto, and then Lindsey Rowley will join the show. It'll be a lot of fun the final hour. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone.